Hello, welcome. My name's James Brodie. I have 25 years trading experience in London, New York, Tokyo and Singapore, and I'm now head of learning and development at Onyx Capital Group. Welcome to my new show, Macro Monday, Trends, Risks and Analysis. In this week's show, we'll be looking at stronger recent US economic data, the OIS pricing, and what's expected from the central banks in upcoming meetings. We'll discuss recent dollar strength, what's causing it, and the possible implications. We'll discuss the breakout in price action in gold and silver, which has timed perfectly with the sudden sell-off in tech stocks. We'll talk about those tech stocks, the big move they had on Friday, and the fact that they're now in intermediate downtrends. We'll discuss positioning and the risks associated with that. And we'll touch on volatility. The market started March in particularly low vol regime. We were at 2-year lows in bond and FX volatility, just off that in equity volatility. Now suddenly volatility is picking up. We'll discuss the risks there and also the key data and market events to look out for in the week ahead. First of all, on the economic data. You may remember we started the year pricing 160 basis points of cuts from the US Federal Reserve. That's what the overnight index swap was pricing. But since the start of the year, US data has come out consistently stronger than expected. Three key pieces of data in the last few weeks. We had a strong payrolls coming out for March. We've had consistently strong purchasing managers indices. We've had strong CPI in the US. And also just a week ago, we've had stronger than expected retail sales. If we look at the purchasing managers index, this is the fusion index. Above 50 shows expansion, below 50 contraction. Well, this had been in contraction globally for 18 months. You can see the chart here. The JP Morgan Global Manufacturing Purchasing Managers Index. It's a key forward-looking indicator. GDP, for instance, is much more backward-looking data. PMIs are more forward-looking. And as I said, it been in contraction for 18 months, but the last 2 months, we've seen expansion. We had surprisingly strong data coming out for March in the US, coming in at 50.3. The first expansion in 18 months in the US from the PMIs, and that was expected to come in at 48.3. So expected to stay in contraction, we got sudden expansion. Just a few days later, we got stronger than expected data from China as well. China, we're seeing huge amounts of stimulus by the central bank and the government, and what we see now was the first expansion in 6 months. The PMI is coming in at 50.8, expected to come in at 50.1. This has been one of the reasons why we've seen recent strength in commodities, which we'll go into a bit later. But also what this has done, it's taken back the cuts expected by the central banks. Data is coming in far stronger than expected than the US. The Federal Reserve do not need to cut as there's simply no recession on the horizon. Beginning of last year, 85% of economists were expecting a recession. It didn't occur last year, and there's no signs of it occurring in the near future. If we look at Europe, on the other hand, PMIs in Germany are particularly low, coming in at just 41.9. You can see that on the chart below. Also, last week, IMF has cut its growth forecast in 2024 for Germany down to just 0.2%, and bankruptcies are also rising. Other data showing weakness. New car registrations fell 5.3% across the European Union in just 1 month alone. And annual sales of electric vehicles fell 11.3% in the EU and 28.9% in Germany. Germany industrial production, on the other hand, though, has just shown some signs of strength, up slightly better than expected the last 2 months. Again, is this green shoots? We'll need to see more of that, because with PMIs at 41.9, Germany is certainly in the doldrums. And with this, we've seen a change in rhetoric from central bank governors, and more importantly, a divergence from the Fed members and from ECB members. Just last week, Fed Chairman Powell said, if higher inflation persists, the Fed can maintain the current rate as long as needed. Also, Fed Williams said, if data called for higher rates, the Fed would hike. This was the first time we've heard talks of hikes in many months from Fed members. This again saw bond yields go aggressively higher. And Fed's Bostic also said, I do not have a recession in my outlook. Last week, we had a whole raft of more dovish central ECB members. And President Lagarde said she would be cutting rates soon, barring no major surprises. And also she said at the last week meeting, just 2 weeks ago, a few members felt sufficiently confident to cut rates this month. So what we're seeing, a clear divergence in interest rate expectations, and this is one of the main reasons the dollar is going aggressively higher. As I mentioned earlier, the Fed was expected to be cutting 160 basis points this year. That's what the OIS was pricing at the start of the year. Now the market's just expecting 38 basis points of cuts this year. So the market's saying one, possibly two cuts from the Fed this year. But on the other hand, with the ECB, the market's expecting three cuts and one at the June meeting. You can see 21 basis points, that's 84% chance that the ECB cut at the very next meeting on the 6th of June. The US rates on hold and possible discussions of a hike. ECB cutting at the next meeting, this is why euro dollar is now at 4-month lows and why the dollar is so strong against many other currencies as well. Bank of England, we got 54 basis points of cuts priced this year. RBA, just 24 basis points of cuts. But what we are seeing is weaker data out of Australia. We've just had the most pessimistic consumer data since the early 1990s. That's from Westpac. RBNZ's pricing 30 basis points of cuts. The Bank of Japan, on the other hand, is the market's pricing 21 basis points, nearly one full hike this year. Remember, the BOJ had been at negative rates for several years and recently finally hiked to positive rates. And if inflation persists above their 2% target, then we'll expect them to hike again. So on to the dollar strength. Dollar yen is now at 34-year highs. Leverage funds and asset managers hold their biggest long position in 17 years. This is a risk to positioning. If the market is so long one way, then when you do get a correction, stops are triggered, you can get aggressive moves lower. We had that with the yen in 2019. Biggest move in 7 years in the yen. Ironically, it was in Asia time, but while Japan was on holiday. Other currencies are very weak against the dollar. I mentioned earlier, the Australian dollar, the British pound, and the euro are all at 4-month lows. Of course, the euro makes up 58% of the dollar index. The Indian rupee is at an all-time low against the dollar. And what we're starting to see last week is emerging markets suddenly falling quite aggressively. Brazilian lira and dollar Mexico were up 5% in just 1 week alone. Korea, Japan, and Vietnam are all threatening intervention. This is I have here a picture of the dollar wrecking ball, that famous phrase, but a stronger dollar particularly hurts emerging market currencies. You may remember the 97 Asia crisis, discussions about and possible murmurs of the Fed hiking and all the cuts being unwound. This is why the dollar is being driven higher and it's causing a lot of angst amongst other central banks. Euro dollar, do I think it will head to parity? Personally, I do. With the way the economies are taking divergent paths. Other key point here, of course, inflation is falling much quicker in Europe and the UK. Inflation has remained sticky in the US. We've had three stronger than expected inflation prints, CPIs consistently remaining above 3%, and core inflation is also starting to trend higher again. Concerns for central bank, divergent policies, And personally, I do think euro-dollar is heading back towards parity. Another growing concern in the markets is about US Treasury issuance. On the 11th of April, we saw a huge move in bonds. The US yield jumped 23.5 basis points in one day. We had a hotter than expected CPI, followed by a very weak 10-year auction. It had the third biggest tail on record. This is after yields have backed up. We're seeing demand falling for US Treasuries. Of course, Chinese demand has completely disappeared. And we have an interesting week this week. We have $183 billion of 2, 5, and 7 year issuance. One thing to watch this year will be the 2 year and the 10 year yields. 2 years currently trading dead on 5%, 10 year at 4.65. If this pushes higher, this will be an increasing concern to Janet Yellen. Interesting point from the Bank of America fund managers survey. Fund managers selling bonds at their fastest pace in more than two decades. And if we look at Treasury, the market, since 2019, Treasury market has increased more than 60%. It's now six times larger than prior to the financial crisis. Meanwhile, the US debt is currently rising by $1 trillion every 100 days, and annual interest payments have just reached $1 trillion, surpassing defense spending for the first time, according to the US Congressional Budget Office. So keep a keen eye on US bond prices this week with a huge issuance coming through. And on to equities. Equities had been on a stellar run, really, since all the stimulus that came in from COVID. May 2020, I believe, off the top of my head, was the low in the S&P, and we've just had a consistent run higher ever since. In March, the Nikkei finally made new all-time highs after 34 years. But what we've seen in the last 3 weeks is equities have started to struggle. The Nikkei is now down 9.5% from its highs, and the MSCI Emerging Market Stocks Index has erased year-to-date gains. Bigger concerns, though, if we look at the US. Less than 30% of S&P members are trading above the 50-day moving average. The S&P high was on the 1st of April. The NASDAQ high was the 21st of March. Since then, we've seen the sell-off pick up in speed, and it's now both markets could be classified as being in intermediate downtrends. Remember Nvidia, the darling stock of the recent AI bubble? Well, that fell exactly 10% on Friday in just one trading session. It's now down 21.8% from the highs. Supermicro Computer, much more volatile, but a brief darling of the markets, was down over 23% on Friday. And Tesla, that was everybody's darling, is now down 49.4% from its all-time highs. You may remember in December 2021, Tesla was worth more than the next 10 biggest car companies combined by market cap. Again, another risk to be aware of this week, we have a raft of earnings. Amongst them, Microsoft, Google, Meta, Tesla we have this week as well, and IBM. And something retail traders should be more concerned about here. They're consistently fed the narrative of just keep buying or buy the dip. But as you can see, Nvidia's down nearly 22% from the highs. Tesla's down nearly 50%. What the smart money does, when the trend starts going down, they exit these assets and move into other assets. If we discuss gold, I mentioned that the NASDAQ peaked on the 21st of March, the S&P on the 1st of April. Well, right in the middle of those, on the 28th of March, gold finally broke out to make new all-time highs. We discussed this in our weekly podcast in beginning of January. A trade I highlighted for the year was to buy gold if it broke and closed above 2080. Over the last 2 years, we'd seen four consistent peaks at 2080, but gold was unable to close above it. Well, on the 28th of March, it broke out and it's been trading aggressively higher ever since. While retail traders are being sold the story to just keep buying, the tech stocks, the smart money, the hedge funds, the real money, such as asset managers, pension funds, insurance companies, they're rotating out and clearly moving into commodities, and gold and silver are surging. Here's the chart of gold taken this morning. You can see the clear four peaks going back to actually 2020, and you can see the clear break higher. It looks like we had a break in November, December. That was actually just an intraday move in New Zealand time where stops were triggered in a completely illiquid market. The price broke higher and closed the day actually lower. The break of 2080 on a close was the 28th of March, and gold has been surging since. We have a slight pullback this morning. Silver's down 3.3% this morning. It looks to be just a bit of profit taking as the market consolidates. It's clearly in overbought levels and consolidating before the next leg higher. If we move on to silver, I've taken this chart, I've taken a snap back to 2010, so we could have a quick look at the silver bubble of 2011. Back then, silver went from $8 to $49 in 18 months, and the bubble was burst when exchanges called for more margin from silver longs. All the market participants were maxed long and unable to make their margin calls, so they reduced positions. The selling created a tsunami of selling, and the market sold off 33% in 2 weeks. You can see the size of the recent move is tiny in comparison. You can see while gold has been making new all-time highs, silver is a long way off, and it's just stalling at 30, where we had highs in 2020, 2021. A break above there will see renewed buying. And here's a good chart of commodities against the NASDAQ. Interesting statistic from Bank of America Global Fund Manager Survey. Commodities saw their largest monthly allocation increase in history last month. And you can see with tech stocks falling aggressively last week, commodities rallying. Also a good point to bring up, copper's rallying hard. Copper is a key component of industrial production. And with the bounce in the PMIs and the signs of life again in the Chinese economy, it's good signal for base metals. Certainly this chart is getting more discussion on social media. And as I said, smart money may be rotating out of tech stocks and the S&P. Commodities are definitely a winner. Something retail traders should take a closer look at. And looking at the economic data, I wanted to focus a bit more on employment. Yes, inflation is a key central bank metric at the moment and a key mandate that they are judged on, but employment is also key for the strength of the economy. We've seen consistently strong payrolls in the US. We have an unemployment rate incredibly low at 3.8%, just off cycle lows at 3.4%. But the reason I wanted to mention this is although the monthly payrolls consistently coming in above expectations, there are signs of weakness under the bonnet. The JOLTS index is coming in lower. The New York Fed probability of finding a new job is coming in lower. And small business optimism in the US is now the lowest level since 2012. And of course, small businesses make up about 70% of the jobs in the US. Their hiring plans are falling aggressively. Even if we look at the US payroll data, last month, March, full-time jobs were actually down. Overall employment was up 303,000, but full-time jobs down 6,000. It was part-time jobs that were up significantly, up 691,000. The more shocking piece of data is we look at full-time jobs in the US, they've actually fallen by 1.34 million over the last year. So job data has come in strong, but these are part-time jobs, and full-time jobs are actually falling aggressively. They are all typically also low-income jobs. It's good people are getting jobs, but it's not a strong signal for the economy if the jobs are moving to part-time. So on to the week ahead. What data we have this week? Well, the key data in the US really is Q1 GDP on Thursday, and on Friday, PCE inflation data, a key inflation metric the Federal Reserve look at. We have some minor employment data, of course. We have the weekly jobless claims, but the big monthly payrolls will come out the week after. It's also a big earnings week in equities. Many stocks reporting this week. Again, key to watch the equity indices. In the downtrend, will we see buying or will we start to see some capitulation and the speed of the move increase? Big week for Treasury issuance, as I said earlier. Watch the 2-year and the 10-year yields there. Of course, we have geopolitical tensions. The problem here is this is headline risk. We know when equity earnings are released. We know when the Treasury issuance is happening. We know when the economic data is being released. Geopolitical tensions escalating or hopefully diffusing, these come out as headlines and they're impossible to prepare for. Right now, geopolitical tensions seem to be falling. The dollar continued strength there. Keep an eye out for that. That's causing increasing tensions politically in emerging markets. Also, keep an eye on the gold price. Again, gold and silver off small today, but we've seen significant rallies. Will the market continue to chase this? We're now seeing more and more narrative about this in the press. The journalists are talking about this. This typically is when retail traders move into a market. Will equities continue to fall and commodities continue to rally? And one thing I've not mentioned as well, volatility. In March, we saw 2-year lows in FX and bond volatility. Equity market volatility was just off 2-year lows, but all of a sudden, bond vol spiked when we had the CPI data and then the weak 10-year Treasury bond issuance that afternoon. Keep an eye on volatility. I've seen several mentions of VAR shocks. Of course, volatility, when it's this low, traders typically build up bigger and bigger positions. When volatility picks up, it typically picks up pretty quickly. You may remember Volmageddon back in February 2018. Hopefully we don't see a repeat of that, but that's something to keep an eye on with certain risks emerging in the financial markets. So that was the first Macro Monday. Thank you if you've reached this far, and hopefully we will see you next week. Thanks very much.